Book 12, The Sirens, Cilus and Charybdis. Odysseus and his men return to Circe's island. While the men sleep, Circe takes Odysseus aside to hear about the underworld and to offer advice. Then said the lady Circe, "So, all those trials are over. Listen with care to this now, and a god will arm your mind. Square in your ship's path are sirens, crying beauty to bewitch men coasting by. Woe to the innocent who hears that sound. He will not see his lady nor his children enjoy, crowding about him home from sea. The sirens will sing his mind away on their sweet meadow lolling. There are bones of dead men rotting in a pile beside them, and flayed skins shrivel around the spot. Steer wide, keep well to seaward. Plug your oarsmen's ears with beeswax kneaded soft. None of the rest should hear that song. But if you wish to listen, let the men tie you in the lugger, hand and foot, back to the mast, lash to the mast, so you may hear those harpies' thrilling voices. Shout as you will, begging to be untied, your crew must only twist more line around you and keep their stroke up till the singers fade. What then? One of two courses you may take, and you yourself must weigh them. I shall not plan the whole action for you now, but only tell you of both. Ahead are beetling rocks, and dark blue glancing Amphitrite, surging, roars around them. Prowling rocks or drifters, the gods in bliss have named them. Name them well. Not even birds can pass them by. A second course lies between headlands. One is a sharp mountain piercing the sky, with storm cloud round the peak, dissolving never, not in the brightest summer to show heaven's azure there, nor in the fall. No mortal man could scale it, nor so much as land there, not with 20 hands and feet, so sheer the cliffs are, as of polished stone. Midway that height, a cavern full of mist opens toward Erebus and evening. Skirting this in the lugger, great Odysseus, your master bowman, shooting from the deck, would come short of the cave mouth with his shaft. But that is the den of Scylla, where she yaps abominably, a newborn whelp's cry, though she is huge and monstrous. God or man, no one could look on her in joy. Her legs, and there are 12, are like great tentacles, unjointed, and upon her serpent necks are borne 6 heads like nightmares of ferocity, with triple serried rows of fangs and deep gullets of black death. Half her length she sways, her head in air, outside her horrid cleft, hunting the sea around that promontory for dolphins, dogfish, or what bigger game thundering Amphitrite feeds in thousands. And no ship's company can claim to have passed her without loss and grief. She takes from every ship one man for every gullet. The opposite point seems more a tongue of land you'd touch with a good bow shot at the narrows. A great wild fig, a shaggy mass of leaves grows on it, and Charybdis lurks below to swallow down the dark sea tide. 3 times from dawn to dusk, she spews it up and sucks it down again 3 times, a whirling maelstrom. If you come upon her then, the god who makes earth tremble could not save you. No, hug the cliff of Scylla. Take your ship through on a racing stroke. Better to mourn 6 men than lose them all, and the ship too. So her advice ran, but I faced her, saying, "Only instruct me, goddess, if you will. How, if possible, can I pass Charybdis or fight off Scylla when she raids my crew?" Swiftly that loveliest goddess answered me, "Must you have battle in your heart forever, the bloody toil of combat? Old contender, will you not yield to the immortal gods? That nightmare cannot die, being eternal evil itself, horror and pain and chaos. There is no fighting her. No power can fight her. All that avails is flight. Lose headway there along that rock face while you break out arms, and she'll swoop over you, I fear, once more, taking one man again for every gullet. No, no. Put all your backs into it. Row on. Invoke blind force that bore the scourge of men to keep her from a second strike against you. Then you will coast Thrinacia, the island where Helios's cattle graze, fine herds and flocks of goodly sheep. The herds and flocks are 7, with 50 beasts in each. No lambs are dropped, or calves, and these fat cattle never die. Immortal, too, their cowherds are, their shepherds, Phaethusia and Lampetia, sweetly braided nymphs that divine Neaera bore to the overlord of high noon, Helios. These nymphs their gentle mother bred and placed upon Thrinacia, the distant land, in care of flocks and cattle for their father. Now give those kinds a wide berth. Keep your thoughts intent upon your course for home, and hard seafaring brings you all to Ithaca. But if you raid the beeves, I see destruction for ship and crew. Rough years, then, lie between you and your homecoming, alone and old, the one survivor, all companions lost. At dawn, Odysseus and his men continue their journey. Odysseus decides to tell the men only of Circe's warnings about the Sirens, whom they will soon encounter. He is fairly sure that they can survive this peril if he keeps their spirits up. Suddenly, the wind stops. The crew are on their feet, briskly, to furl the sail and stow it. Then, each in place, they poise the smooth oar blades and sent the white foam scudding by. I carved a massive cake of beeswax into bits and rolled them in my hands until they softened. No long task, for a burning heat came down from Helios, lord of high noon. Going forward, I carried wax along the line and laid it thick on their ears. They tied me up, then, plumb amidships, back to the mast, lashed to the mast, and took themselves again to rowing. Soon, as we came smartly within hailing distance, the two Sirens, noting our fast ship off their point, made ready, and they sang. The lovely voices, in ardor appealing over the water, made me crave to listen, and I tried to say, "Untie me," to the crew, jerking my brows. But they bent steady to the oars. Then Perimedes got to his feet, he and Eurylochus, and passed Moreline about to hold me still. So all rowed on, until the Sirens dropped under the sea rim, and their singing dwindled away. My faithful company rested on their oars now, peeling off the wax that I had laid thick on their ears, then set me free. But scarcely had that island faded in blue air than I saw smoke and white water with sound of waves and tumult, a sound the men heard, and it terrified them. Oars flew from their hands, the blades went knocking wild alongside till the ship lost way, with no oar blades to drive her through the water. Well, I walked up and down, from bow to stern, trying to put heart into them, standing over every oarsman, saying gently, "Friends, have we never been in danger before this? More fearsome is it now than when the Cyclops penned us in his cave? What power he had! Did I not keep my nerve and use my wits to find a way out for us? Now I say, by hook or crook, this peril, too, shall be something that we remember. Heads up, lads. We must obey the orders as I give them. Get the oar shafts in your hands and lay back hard on your benches. Hit these breaking seas. Zeus, help us pull away before we founder. You at the tiller, listen and take in all that I say. The rudders are your duty. Keep her out of the combers and the smoke. Steer for that headland. Watch the drift, or we fetch up in the smother and you drown us." That was all, and it brought them round to action. But as I sent them on toward Scylla, I told them nothing, as they could do nothing. They would have dropped their oars again in panic to roll for cover under the decking. Circe's bidding against arms had slipped my mind, so I tied on my cuirass and took up two heavy spears, then made my way along to the foredeck, thinking to see her first from there, the monster of the gray rock, harboring torment for my friends. I strained my eyes upon that cliffside veiled in cloud, but nowhere could I catch sight of her. And all this time, in travail, sobbing, gaining on the current, we rowed into the strait, Scylla to port, and on our starboard beam, Charybdis, dire gorge of the salt sea tide. By heaven, when she vomited, all the sea was like a cauldron, seething over intense fire, when the mixture suddenly heaves and rises. The shot spume soared to the landside heights and fell like rain. But when she swallowed the seawater down, we saw the funnel of the maelstrom, heard the rock bellowing all around, and dark sand raged on the bottom far below. My men all blanched against the gloom. Our eyes were fixed upon that yawning mouth in fear of being devoured. Then Scylla made her strike, whisking six of my best men from the ship. I happened to glance aft at ship and oarsmen and caught sight of their arms and legs dangling high overhead. Voices came down to me in anguish, calling my name for the last time. A man surf-casting on a point of rock for bass or mackerel, whipping his long rod to drop the sinker and the bait far out, will hook a fish and rip it from the surface to dangle wriggling through the air. So these were borne aloft in spasms toward the cliff. She ate them as they shrieked there in her den, in the dire grapple, reaching still for me, and deathly pity ran me through at that sight, far the worst I ever suffered, questing the passes of the strange sea. We rode on. The rocks were now behind. Charybdis, too, and Scylla dropped astern. Odysseus tries to persuade his men to bypass Thrinacia, the island of the sun god Helios, but they insist on landing. Driven by hunger, they ignore Odysseus's warning not to feast on Helios's cattle. This disobedience angers the sun god, who threatens to stop shining if payment is not made for the loss of his cattle. To appease Helios, Zeus sends down a thunderbolt to sink Odysseus's ship. Odysseus alone survives. He eventually drifts to Ogygia, the home of Calypso, who keeps him on her island for 7 years. With this episode, Odysseus ends the telling of his tale to King Alcinous.